You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 30th of November. Donovan Mitchell with some interesting thoughts about how his game's evolving and the legacy he wants to leave off the floor. Plus, the preseason schedule's out and the COVID requirements. Craig Bowlerjack stops by to start our Utah Jazz season preview series. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan each and every day. The Jazz preseason schedule was announced. Since we've talked last, Donovan Mitchell was extended and did a press conference. Since we talked last, we'll hear from Donovan here in just a moment. But December 12th, so yes, 12 days from now, on Saturday, the Utah Jazz will take the floor at Vivint Arena without fans, and they will play the Phoenix Suns. They will do the same thing the Monday after. And then Thursday, they will head to L.A. at the Staples Center to play the Clippers. Three preseason games. And here's what's crazy. Preseason, to some extent, has started. But as for this week, starting tomorrow, December 1st, they can only work out four players on the floor at one time. The next week, there are no restrictions. But really, to what that means is the Jazz will have training camp starting on the 6th. Run through the 11th, 5 days of full team work before they play their first preseason game. It is the shortest time period in the history of professional sports from the end of one season to the start of the next. And it is all about to happen. It's really incredible. There's a lot of different things that are out there. The COVID requirements came out. Really, the biggest one is if someone gets COVID, it sounds like 12 days until they can play. And then the other one that's really interesting is if somebody in their household or immediate contact has any type of symptoms, suddenly they're on complete lockdown. It's going to be interesting to see whether the league can pull this off with the widespread of COVID, with kind of an over the explosion that's taking place in the midst of it. If they, in hotels, they sent out a 145-page document. In hotels, that you can't use the fitness center, you can't use the pool, you can't use the spa, you can't use the sauna, you can't go to the gift shop. If the team wants to use the fitness center, it must have been closed for 12 hours prior and completely sanitized and had nobody in there for an hour prior to the team being able to use it. So I don't know whether hotels are going to be willing to do this or whether they'll be able to set up their own fitness centers and conference rooms or what they're going to do. But this is going to be a delicate dance. There's no question on what's taking place. All right, Donovan Mitchell held a press Zoom, and I got a chance to chat with him, as did others. I wanted to touch on a few things of what he talked about. I thought he was really incredible. So we'll touch on that. And then Craig Bowlerjack will join me today and tomorrow. Thurl Bailey will join me Wednesday and Thursday. Tony Jones will join me Friday and Monday, and then hopefully Ron Boone Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, and we'll have another person for Thursday and Friday, and then we, believe it or not, then you're kind of like, you're right into a preseason game. Like that's, and walking toward the beginning of the season. So the Jazz preseason series is upon us. All right, let's start with Donovan. I thought he was truly remarkable about what his role in society is first. I think he's really special in that regard. I've said this numerous times. We'll get to his basketball in a moment. But here are two comments from Donovan. The first, just about what he wants to do now that he has this unbelievable wealth. And then the second, about his legacy. Let's start with just the first aspect of things. And just very simply, you know, the access to unbelievable wealth.
I think, you know, the biggest thing I wanted to do, you know, now that I've done so many different things, you know, off the floor as far as giving back, you know, I'm in a position now where I can, you know, do things on a higher level. As far as, you know, giving to kids, maybe going to colleges, you know, who can't afford it, giving back to schools, giving back to kids who can't even afford, you know, groceries or different things. So I think that's really where my focus is at like I said, take care of my family to start, but also take care of others. You know, like I said, it's a lot, you know, and I'm blessed to be in this position, but, you know, I do know that I'm not going to just change up who I am. I'm going to continue to do what I've been doing. And as far as giving back and, you know, whether it's to my sister or to someone in need, I'm just going to continue to do that.
The other aspect of this is not financial, but just limelight, spotlight, and how he uses it. And it was clear inside the bubble that he and Jaylen Brown and CJ McCollum and when they met with Vice President Harris or Vice President-elect Harris, that this is going to be a role of these three. LeBron and Chris Paul are leading this union right now and leading them forward and in many ways leading the social justice. It's clear to me that Donovan, Jaylen Brown, and CJ McCollum are going to be the next generation, and I actually think could be much larger than basketball. The way the world works right now with social networking, with Instagram, with following, these athletes have an opportunity to lead in a much larger sense, and I suspect Donovan will be able to do that. So I asked him just about that, coming out of that, where he is in that regard, and I thought, just an incredibly thoughtful young man. Here's what he had to say.
The moment in history where we had in the bubble was one of the biggest, if we'll go down as one of the biggest moments in history of this country and in the world. And, you know, for me, you know, starting off the year with having COVID to coming down and doing what I've been doing is just something for me. Like, that's the legacy I want to leave. You know, championships are great. Games are great. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm a black man first. And that's the legacy I want to be able to tell my kids, look, your dad was a part of this. Your dad was a part of that. Being able to show them that this game is great. This game has allowed my family to live the way we live. But at the end of the day, it doesn't hide you from being black. It doesn't hide you from this injustice of the world. And so for myself, I know Jaylen and CJ, the two guys you mentioned, are big on this as well. At the end of the day, that's what it's really about. You know, at the end of the day, basketball goes away in about 10, 15 years if you have a long career. But at the end of the day, I'm still a black man. There's certain things that there's just injustice in this world that I won't, that people on this call that you, like you, Lock, that you don't go through. And I don't mean to call, single you out, but like there's just certain things that people, you know, don't understand. And I'm trying to be the catalyst and one of the people who start things and just kind of show people and educate people on the injustices so we can improve as a country. And if I can go down and tell my kids that that's what I did in this world, I would be very happy.
Donovan's just amazing. I've always joked with him that he's taken a pay cut by being in the NBA because he can be a CEO of a major company. He's bright, he's thoughtful, he's caring, he's transparent, he's genuine, he's an incredible player too. But he's going to have major societal impact in all the positive ways, and I'm all here to see it, support it, watch it, and be of assistance in any way because he's just that great. What we're all excited to watch is his basketball game again. In the bubble, he went nuts, right? And a large part of what he did going nuts is he shot 51% off the bounce threes and took 7 of them a game. And he's well aware that that's what changed in his game.
The biggest thing I noticed, you know, I was able to just play with more pace. Play, when I say with pace, you know, everybody thinks, you know, I'm explosive, I'm quick. Being able to slow myself down, slow the game down, that happens in a variety of ways. You know, being on the ball a little bit more, you know, knocking down the three ball really helped it expand my game. It allowed me to get into the paint, make the right reads, and not just, you know, scoring. Everybody saw, you know, the 50-point games or whatever, but what I saw was I was making plays that it's not even just scoring, but finding guys, putting guys in position to score, doing the same thing for others that I hadn't done in my first 3 years, or two and a half, whatever you want to call it. So for me, that was really the jump that I saw and I can continue to make, you know, the decision-making, getting into the paint, finding guys, being able to run the floor so Mike has a lane to get open, being able to pick it up on the defensive end, you know, guarding Jamal in game 7, that's a challenge that I'm, you know, starting to get back to and willing to take because that's where I attended, that's why I got drafted. But that's where I think, you know, those strides for myself will continue, and I'll continue to push myself to be there. But, you know, offensively, I think the biggest thing was being able to knock down the three ball off the dribble. I think, I don't know what my percentages are, but I think that's what really helped me and allowed me to get into the paint and make plays for others.
The other interesting thing Donovan had to say in the midst of that, and by the way, like that will be, you know, who knows how much of that was bubble, how much of that is replicable. I mean, what Donovan did is he went from being basically a 31% off the bounce 3-point shooter to a 36, 9% and then exploded in the seeding games and they exploded to 51% against Denver. I do get nervous when we start to equate things we see against Denver in a 7-game playoff series as the future. There's a uniqueness to how they defend and Jokic and all those things. And so I'm not sure that you can really take all of that as the model of what to expect, but he certainly took a jump and that's going to be the next step. And that's what we saw to Dame too. You know, Dame was a 35-36% three-point shooter off the bounce, who suddenly became a 40% three-point shooter off the bounce, who suddenly became a, you know, massively impressive scorer at 30 points a game at that point. And that's where Donovan is as well. Donovan had some interesting comments as well about integrating the team and getting everyone back together and finding their rhythm for this year.
I don't think it'll change that much. I think, you know, the biggest thing, there are times, you know, where you look, we're looking for Bojan. I think that'll be a big piece, a big addition, a big relief on the offensive end, for sure. I think Mike and Joe can say the same thing, and JC and Rudy. I think we all can say the same thing. But for me, I think, you know, being able to just push the ball in transition, getting on the boards where we're just pushing. I'm pushing myself as opposed to just being the dominant ball handler, because we have 4, 5, 6 ball handlers, guys who can bring the ball to the floor and initiate the offense. So for myself, just being able to be more active, you know, on the defensive end, allow me to push on the break, you know, being able to start a play and get Mike a shot, be able to get Joe a shot, Bojan a shot. I think that's where I elevated my game in the bubble, and I look to continue to do that this year. And it's going to take some figuring out, because when you add Bojan back, there's a different, you know, it's a different element, not in a bad way, but there's going to be some things we need to just figure out. And I think we'll take that much more of a leap when we do.
That is Donovan Mitchell from his presser. They're going to have media week instead of media day. So we'll have all of these interviews. We'll take the snippets. We'll talk around them. I'll take little pieces of all of them and see what I thought was newsworthy and all the rest. So that'll be throughout the week at Locked On Jazz. So make sure you tune in and coming your direction all the way up to that preseason game on the 12th. And as we continue through, it is also time for preseason previews. Craig Bowler Jack will join us here in just a moment to talk about the season ahead of us. Derek Favors' return, Donovan Mitchell's breakout. A lot of Donovan today. We'll talk about Derek tomorrow and where the West looks. Thurl Bailey will join us for Wednesday and Thursday. Tony Jones, Friday and Monday. We need space in between the two of us talking. And then Booner on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week coming up. This is all part of Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Locked On Fantasy Basketball, Josh Lloyd is up and rolling, so make sure you grab that and tune in. He's got that show top 50 on the iTunes charts right now, getting ready for the fantasy season as well. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. Lots of great things going on at Murdoch Chevy. We'll get to the end of the year. Tax breaks on big vehicles, all those kind of things going on right now, plus a $250 gift card to all holiday shopping at Al's Sporting Good with a purchase of new kids. And then the Murdochs really doing wonderful things. Their portion of every sale helps winter boots for Utah's foster care children. 4,739 kids received foster care last year in Utah. 750 kids adopted throughout the year. They do great work. And the Murdochs are making sure that they all have the necessities to get ready for the winter. So that's all taking place in the season of giving at the Murdochs right now with Al's Sporting Good and Utah Foster Care. Murdochs will give you an additional 20 to 40% VIP code off of items at Al's Sporting Good for you. Great lineup of cars. You know the Suburban. You know the Tahoe. Also, there is the completely awesome Equinox, the new Blazer, and the Trailblazer, all at Murdoch Chevy, located in Logan, also in Woods Cross, right off the freeway. Stop by, visit Murdoch Chevy. If you're going to stop by and you're looking for this, feel free, email me first. We'll get it set up for you and get you the VIP treatment that we do at Murdoch Hyundai as well. There's no reason not to give you the exact same thing. It's all set up at Murdoch Chevy, located in Woods Cross and in Logan. $250 gift card for holiday shopping at Al's Sporting Goods, and donations going to winter boots at the Utah Foster Care Children Center. It's all for Murdoch's and Murdoch Chevy. The preseason interview series, well, actually, it's usually a mid-season of the off-season interview. It's usually done in, like, August when we're, like, a few months away, and now we're we're like days away. Like, preseason game happens in a matter of weeks. Opening night starts within a month. And Craig Bowlerjack joins us for the first of what will be a few interviews. Tony Jones of The Athletic, Thurl Bailey will join us as well. And we'll continue down the road as we'll be previewing you to get ready for that opening night on the 22nd or 23rd for the Utah Jazz. Craig Bowlerjack, are you ready?
You know, I don't even know what month it is, to be totally honest. You know, you just said we're getting ready for, am I right, preseason?
Yeah, it is truly wacky, isn't it?
It is. You know, honestly, as we speak, we should be about 14 games in. I think that's a good guesstimate as we speak. And here we are, just getting ready for camp. And three preseason games before the opener on December 22nd, the league opener. I'm not sure. We haven't even seen the schedule yet. That's amazing, David, to see the 72-game schedule, the breakdown where there's an opportunity if COVID hits, which I'm certain it will impact this league. There'll be some times or some availability dates, dates available to make up some games. So, yeah, it is what it is. And you and I – lived through COVID, the night in Oklahoma City. We broadcast in an arena that was totally empty back in the summer, the bubble. And here we are starting up a new season, which I don't have a clue how this is all going to work out, but we're going to find out together.
And it's an interesting season from a Jazz standpoint because to some extent it's monumental. It's Ryan and Ashley Smith's first year as owners. It's Donovan and Rudy. You know, we'll see what happens with Rudy's deal. But if those deals are done, solidified as the cornerstones of our franchise in a way that, you know, we've probably never, you know, at dollar figures we've never seen before. I mean, it's a really monumental season for this franchise in the midst of just nothing feeling normal.
Yeah, you bring up great points. You know, you and I have been around and watched this franchise make some interesting decisions and changes. Did we ever think that Gail and the Miller family would sell? I was surprised but not shocked. But with the circumstances of COVID and other issues, racial injustice, et cetera, you know, Gail made it very clear, David, I thought that, you know, the time had come. And I respected her conversation with all of us, you know, with the Jazz organization and to the local media that, you know, Larry and her lived the dream. Larry sadly has moved on, has passed away. But, you know, I applaud her for trying to keep this franchise as stable as possible. But she made the point that it was, you know, Ryan and Ashley's turn to live their dream. And I thought she handed it off really beautifully in that regard. And, you know, and she even mentioned herself, new blood. And we'll see how that impacts his franchise, not only with some decisions that will be forthcoming, I'm sure, with Ryan and the way he likes to run the organization, but David, also the pockets that he must provide. I'm speaking of deep pockets money-wise and the decisions he'll make to put this team on the front porch of what hopefully will be an NBA championship. Is it overnight? No, but the pieces, I think, are very close. Is there one missing? Most likely. But from all indications, you and I have met him on just a few occasions, but from everybody that I've talked to, a very aggressive, get it done and do it the right way type of approach. And I'm excited to see where we go.
The only one who like quietly knows him, and he's very quiet about it, is our guy Ron Boone went on a golf trip with him last year. So, like, you know, like Ron stays quiet. We never know about Ron, but, you know, Boone, we'll have to dig in on Booner and find out about golf trips with, you know, Ron's the highfalutin one taking private jets to golf
rounds. Close to the Huntsman's, John, of course, who passed away and was so involved with the cancer research and his golf tournament raised incredible amounts of money over time. But yeah, if you say golf, somehow Boone is involved. It's an amazing thing. Ron Boone finds a golf course mostly every day of the week in the off season.
I like it. All right. This is the question I've gotten asked the most. You know, what is a Ryan and Ashley Smith ownership? By definition, we haven't seen it yet because the sale's not official. But it was very clear that Ryan Smith was intimately involved in every move through the draft and free agency and particularly aware of the financial ramifications. And as we sit right now, the Jazz are in the luxury tax. And I have played around with it. I'm not entirely sure how they're getting out of the luxury tax this year. Often you can go into the tax kind of knowing if you make a deal somewhere along the way that you can get out of it. I don't see how they get out of it. What does that tell us about what the Ryan and Ashley Smith ownership is?
Well, if it stays status quo, David, I think your answer is that he's prepared to handle the cap financially. I know that Dennis Lindsay and now Justin Zanuck, we call him Z, but, you know, they always had the same conversation with all of us in the media and with the broadcast crew when we talk, was they always wanted to check with the Millers, protect the Miller investment. And now you wonder, David, if Ryan has more or less been a little more loose, knowing that he has to pay the Donovan Mitchells and the Rudy Goberts and the Jordan Clarksons, correct? And so here we are. And I think it's hard, David, and I never say small market anymore. I call it mid-market basketball. But in reality, it's more difficult for mid-market organizations to, you know, with ownership to handle the luxury tax. But I think Ryan obviously is making a statement, right? Unless it changes before we start this season. But boy, as I look at it right now, you know, I think he's decided before he even bought this team that he wants to make it a championship caliber franchise, and he's willing to go the extra yard financially to find a way to get it done.
If we're going to talk about great Utahns, let's include another one. Stephen Covey wrote in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, that to view the world, you must view it from the other person's lenses. What do you think the message to Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell is that the Jazz seem to be willing to go into the luxury tax?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would think after talking to Donovan via Zoom the other morning and listening to his conversation again, David, is that he must have a message that this team is serious. They were serious before, but now it's another level. You know, as you know, man, we talked about this on those long plane rides of how you get to the step of championship level. It's a thin line. You know, it's you're always just kind of there putting your first toe on the stair, and then you stumble off of it. I think Ryan and Ashley and the Smith family, I believe, wants to make sure that it's solid footing the rest of the way. Not sure what the Gobert deal is going to be, if it's Supermax or if Gobert understands some of the limitations, you know, that are still real here. But I think he would also get it. If championships and NBA titles aren't easy to come by. And if you have that foundation, I would say that maybe he buys into the fact that, let's hope he does, they're close. So I guess I go back to this statement that we'll find out together, but we will. Jazz Nation, you and I, everybody is really going to find out more and more about Ryan Smith as this season progresses and how they really do handle Rudy before we walk into camp.
Rudy Gobert's extension eligible, max, super max, as well as regular eligible, which is a unique circumstance. They can do both. A lot of times with super max, you can do only super max or nothing else. Jazz can do both. That deal needs to be done prior to the opening day of the NBA season, though, to get that extension done the way I understand it. I hope I'm not wrong on that. There's so many rules right now, and they've all changed. And I've made some mistakes recently I don't usually make, so hopefully I'm right on that. More with Craig Bullerjack. We'll get onto the floor. Back to Donovan in the bubble, what we learned, Derek Favors' return, and more about the Utah Jazz. As we continue, this is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your daily podcast every day on the NBA is Locked On NBA. 30 minutes about the news of the day, quick, there for you every single day with the experts of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes, follow on Spotify. It's Locked On NBA. Homey is revolutionizing the real estate market. Over $50 million in savings from commissions. Homey's helped thousands of buyers and sellers in 2019, and they did the same in 2020 with over $1 billion of real estate transactions. They are selling homes faster. They are selling homes at a higher price, and they are saving you money, giving you more money, both on the buyer and the seller end, to help you get more equity in your deal. Homes listed at Homey sold for 1.2% higher price and comparable homes listed to traditional brokers and sold 8 days faster than comparable homes listed with traditional brokers. Homey surveyed 1,000 millennials. They said, I don't really know what's going on with home buying. So make sure that you go check out Homey's independent study that they did for you that helps you out if you're looking to buy. It's at homey.com/millennials. Here's the deal. If you sell a house for $300,000, 6% of that price, $18,000, goes to the agents traditionally. That's not how Homey's doing it. Homey's giving you a set price on one end and getting you $5,000 back on the other. Find out more by texting LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. An experienced local Homey agent will help you every step of the way. Text LOCK to 88588. Craig Buller, Jack TV voice, the voice of the Utah Jazz, continues with us. All right, we saw Donovan Mitchell go bananas in the bubble. How much of that is just the natural progression of his career? How much of that was unique circumstance of the bubble? What do you think we're seeing out of Donovan Mitchell this season, Craig?
Well, he's 24 years old. What I saw in the bubble was outstanding decision-making. He mentioned that when he met the press a few days ago and discussed it about the bubble and where he is and the max deal or the potential of having $195 million that would go in his pocket. You know, David, we've watched him from a rookie and he's made steady improvement, not only on the floor, but I think the mental side of this game where I'm a believer you can separate yourself from good to great. And Donovan, in my opinion, is on the front on the trajectory of being, you know, I don't like to use the word great, but let's just say the next level of very good. Great takes time. Great takes time. And again, you can either say you're full of it, Bowler, because you've got to win championships to, you know, basically solidify yourself in this league. I don't know if that holds true for Carl and John because of other great accomplishments that their name is by. But I'm excited to see the fourth year. I think we saw, obviously, a preview, don't you, in the bubble. I think he is without fear. I think he has incredible confidence, but also still coachable, but also understands the need that he can do great things, but he still has to do things for his teammates. And that was the beauty of the discussion the other day, was he still understands he has teammates. It's not a one-man game. It's not one on five. Donovan Mitchell has a great gift of leadership, and I know he understands it, not only with this team, but around the NBA, mind you, off the floor, with social issues. And I think, you know, you're seeing a young man grow right before our eyes. He's not only a leader for the Jazz, but an impact player and personality in the NBA.
His answer, and we played it earlier in the show before you joined us, his answer the other day about his role in social justice, I think he's going to be, I mean, that's going to be his legacy. He's going to be truly, I think he and Jaylen Brown are going to lead this league, and both of them are so bright and so worldly in their upbringing. I think both of them have a true chance to be, you know, social leaders well beyond basketball. I think it's a very exciting possibility of who the stamp Donovan Mitchell can leave well beyond, well beyond that of basketball.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I mean, he said his legacy beyond the game. And, you know, Locke, I try to remember what I was doing at 24.
Oh, jeez.
And to see a 24-year-old handle himself this well. Now, some may disagree with his stances, and I get it. But also, I respect the fact that he has the ability to stand and speak and understands. As he said, what was it, David? He goes, at the end, no matter what, no matter what I accomplish, when I leave this game, I'm still a black man. And I thought that was so insightful that was part of his message to us, was that his legacy is going to be balanced, you know, on that. The fact that, yes, I'm a basketball player. Yes, I'm well paid. But in the end, I still leave the floor as a Black man. And it was quite intriguing, quite mature and quite insightful on the way that he looks at himself, life, and this game.
Let's dig into his game a little bit, because what he talked about in our meeting the other day was the off the bounce three and how that's the shot that opened up for him. And if you actually look at his career at that, he shot 29% on the off the bounce three as a rookie, 32% or 33% in the off the bounce three in his second year, and 32%. So 29, 33, and 32% prior to the stoppage of play on March 11th. Then he comes back and shoots 39% in the eight, whatever those games are called, seeding games or whatever they were called.
Seeding games, yeah, seeding.
And then I get very nervous about taking a sample size of a single playoff series, because you're playing a unique team. So a team where Jokic could not get out to defend him, a team where Jamal Murray's not a good defender and Derek White torched him the year before, but he goes and shoots 51% on off the bounce threes in the seven game series against the Nuggets. He's absolutely right. That is the shot. And where is he? The 29, 32, 33% guy, the 39% guy he was in the seeding games. My goodness gracious, if he's 51%, I mean, no one in the league is that, frankly. So I think that's too much to ask, but there's very few players who actually shoot better than 36% on that shot. It's not a traditionally high value shot. It's why player teams play the defense they play. But that seems to be the shot he has zeroed in on that's going to change who he is as a player.
Yeah. Yeah. He made that very clear. And, you know, I look at his stats just from last year. If you combine just 3-point shooting, he was just flirting with 37% overall, David. But, you know, as you break it down on different places and segments on the floor, those numbers are outrageous, by the way. You know, and you and I haven't talked that much about the bubble, but I wish we had more time with Donovan, because there's things I'd like to know about the bubble. You sent me a great article, The Insight, just a few days ago. And it was fascinating how these guys survived upwards to 60 to 90 days in the bubble in Orlando. But, you know, I really wonder, I hope we get a chance to ask if the gym was different, if the fact there were no fans, virtual fans, yes, but if the gym and the rim looked different, if the pressure was less or more because of no crowd noise, piped in, right? And I wonder how much that impacted, let's say, Jamal Murray, who just was dynamite, and Donovan Mitchell, who blew it up as well. I wonder how much that played a factor. And I want to see the comparisons, don't you, when we start playing for real. Now, the Jazz right now hope to put in about 1,500 fans in the stands, and we may see a few more teams around the league dip their toe in the water. And once you start to get noise, real noise, and fan reaction, it may change. But I wonder still, and I don't have the answer. Maybe you do, but I don't have the answer on the impact of those arenas in Orlando, and if it did impact better play than a regular season where you're dealing with 19,000 fans in the arena.
My guess is it's the lack of travel.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, I've always felt that, Craig. I've always felt that what's so tiring, and obviously you and I don't have to play, but it's the travel. Yeah. It's the travel. It's not like these guys are world-class athletes. They're certainly not quite as good on the back end of a back-to-back as they were, but they're really not as good on a back end of a back-to-back when you fly back from L.A. and get at 3:30 in the morning. When we go play those Detroit-Cleveland back-to-backs and it's like a 30-minute flight in between, they seem to be fine. It's the length of travel. So when you suddenly eliminated travel and put everyone at rest and had everyone on their peak performance, that to me is what I think took place in the bubble.
You know, I want some listeners to understand, if you play in the East, those teams are all crowded in one centralized kind of area. Most, not all. I mean, you got to go from New York to Miami. I get that. But for the Jazz and the Blazers, I mean, you're still having a pretty good flight after a night against the Nuggets and you fly up for a back-to-back with the Blazers, by the time you get on the flight, it's still nearly an hour 45. And you make a great point. The preseason schedule, look at it. You play Phoenix twice. The Suns are going to stay in Salt Lake for 3 days, play two games, and the Jazz go to L.A. to play the Clippers once and done. And you look around the other schedule of the preseason, David, what you just said, I think the league has finally heard the players and understand after the bubble that if you can eliminate and play like what baseball does, and if you park yourself in L.A. and play the Lakers, Clippers, Lakers, or play Laker, Laker, Clippers and get out of town, then you save time, body, and mind. And I think when the schedule finally comes out, as we talk, I don't know when that's going to happen, maybe tomorrow, but we still, as we speak, don't know what the 72-game schedule is going to be like. But you and I have talked. I think we see pods. I think we see us going to L.A. I think we see going to New York and getting out. I think we go down and, you know, see Orlando, Miami, boom, out the door. You do the Texas Triangle and do little short, quick flights, and you're done. So I think the league's going to make some big changes in the way that they handle their travel schedules from this point on.
I was stunned with how the schedule was announced. I want to go back to Donovan on the floor. I was stunned that we're playing all the Eastern Conference teams. I absolutely did not think that was – I thought we were going to play 10 Eastern Conference games instead of 30.
Me too.
I was stunned at that. I want to share one note on Donovan's game, and then we'll talk about favors in tomorrow's show. So Donovan, I just gave everyone those numbers, 30, you know, 29, 32, 33, went to 39, went to 51. Dame Lillard, who's the most potent off-the-bounce three-point shooter in the league, last few years, 35, 36, 36, 36, 30, excuse me, 35, 36, 35, 36. So that's what he was. Last year, he jumped to 40 because the game's going that way. More importantly, what he did is he jumped to 7 a game. The mm-hmm. off-the-bounce three, what Donovan's really talking about is the off-the-bounce three is the shot he knows he can always get. The fact, I believe, is what Donovan needs to add to his game is more of the catch-and-shoot three. He's one of the elite catch-and-shoot three-point shooters in the NBA. His average the last two seasons, 41, 40, 43% on catch-and-shoot threes. It is hard to find a player in the NBA who over the last 3 years is over 40% on catch-and-shoot threes. They are the elite 10 shooters in the NBA. Bradley Beal's not one of them. I mean, that's how great Donovan is on the catch-and-shoot three. I don't know how we get him more of those, but that to me is the other aspect of it. But that off-the-bounce three is how he takes 9 and 10 threes a game, and that's the game-changing element he's trying to build.
And David, I was curious. I mean, with Bogey's return, I mean, shots and distribution will be key. Donovan had to carry a lot of the load, remember, in the bubble without Bogdanovich. And I'm just curious, I wanted to ask you this tonight, how you see that impacting Donovan and shot selection or shot attempts. And that also includes the three ball, which is what Bogey does so well.
I want Bogey to become Duncan Robinson, Davis Bertans.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is if you look at what Bogey did last year, he shot over 40% at three, and there just really are not that many guys in the league that can do that. Quite simply, it's hard to find guys that shoot 5 threes a game and make over 40%, and it's harder to find guys that are 6'8 or 6'9 who do it. So Davis Bertans is 6'8, 6'9, Duncan Robinson's 6'8, like, and they're getting up 8 and 9 a game. And that would be to me the next spot that I would love to see from Bogey is having him suddenly taking 9. Like, he upped it. The book on him when we got him was he was a high level 3-point shooter who was too selective and would only shoot threes he knew was going in. Okay, you upped it to 5 or 6 a game. Now let's go to the next level. Now start taking 8 and 9 and 10 a game. I want to see him really, really launching those three attempts because he's special in how he can shoot. Here are the guys in the league who shot 40% for threes and took more than 5 a game. Okay. Dame Lillard, Chris Middleton, 5.7, Jason Tatum, Danilo Gallinari, Duncan Robinson, Karl Anthony Towns, Paul George, Seth Curry, Joe Harris, Bojan Bogdanovic, J.J. Redick, Marcus Morris, which I didn't realize, Davis Bertans, Ben McLemore, Terry Rozier, and Sky Maljevic in Detroit. What's most interesting to me about that? Middleton 6'5", Tatum 6'8", Gallinari 6'9", Robinson 6'8", Towns 7 feet, Paul George 6'9", Boyan 6'8", Joe Harris, I think 6'7", Marcus Morris 6'9", Davis Bertan 6'8". This is the future of the league, is these 6'8 guys who can shoot 40% or more from three and just can get it off all the time because their shooting window is so high.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. I'm looking at Bogey's numbers. He went 7-3, three-point attempts, 41 and change from downtown. You know what's amazing too, David? When you look at the top three guys who actually put the threes in, 20 attempts per night by Donovan, Bogey, and Jordan Clarkson. Interesting to see if those three in that 20 number increases by maybe 1.5 to 2 attempts per player. I don't know if that's possible or Quinn gives the green light. Well, he's always got the green light for Jordan Clarkson, but it'll be, I'm anxious to see if the three ball becomes even more in play. As you said, in the league, that's where the league's going. I'm sure the Jazz want to follow.
He's Craig Bullerjack. Tomorrow's show, Derek Favors return. How good are the Jazz? And some thoughts on the rest of the West. That's all coming up. We have another day with Craig Bullerjack tomorrow on Locked On Jazz. Right now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On NBA.